Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome everybody. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa salam taslima kathira wa alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. First of all, welcome new students and our existing students to Zaytuna College. This is our convocation, which is really to open up the school year, particularly for the master students, but we certainly are welcoming the incoming class, small but potent, of our freshmen and the returning students. Alhamdulillah, this year is for us an exciting year for a number of reasons. One, we have a really beautiful campus that's in essence been gifted to us, and it's very important to study in a beautiful place because what you're studying is really about beauty. Truth, goodness, and beauty, these are the great virtues of the ancient world. And they were virtues that the Muslims certainly not only cultivated, but excelled at. They always made their madrasas beautiful. And even the most simple of schools, we could imagine the Prophet ﷺ's mosque, which was really his university, it was his madrasa. But for anybody who's ever been in very simple places, I lived in a place called Geru in West Africa, and it was a very simple mud adobe village, but it was really one of the most beautiful places I've ever lived. So even the utter simplicity of the beauty of nature, imagine having a masjid that's basically built from the natural world around you. The roof is made out of date fibers, and the pillars were made out of the date palm tree, and very simple but beautiful straw mat carpets that grace the place. So it must have been a stunningly beautiful place to study for that early community. But the Muslims excelled at building beautiful institutions because the perpetuity of a tradition is strongest when it has institutions that can transmit it to future generations. So just like we're all links in a chain, those of us who are teachers now and still students, all of us remain students, but those of us who have been ubtilina bita'lim, with the tribulation of teaching, because it is a tribulation, with the tribulation of teaching, we're links in a chain of a tradition that goes back 1400 years. And one of the aspects of that tradition is advice, you know, wasiya, giving advice. The Prophet ﷺ, if you look at the final Hajj, the last message to his ummah was all advice. Take care of your women folk. Stawsu bin nisa'i khayra. You know, take care of your women folk. Avoid racism, avoid manipulating nature. Those were all his final advice. Even on his deathbed, the last thing he gave was advice. Take care of your servants, take care of your women, the prayer, guard your prayer. So this is one of the aspects of the tradition, which is advice. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave the best advice when he said, we give you the advice that we gave the previous peoples before you, that you should be awfully aware of God. You know, awful in the original sense of that word, filled with awe. That, أَنِتَّقُوا اللَّهِ وَلَقَدْ وَصَّيْنَاكُمْ وَالَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْرِكُمْ وَإِيَّاكُمْ أَنِتَّقُوا اللَّهِ. That you should have, you know, we gave advice to the previous people and to you, that you should have this awful awareness of God. So in the spirit of advice, I want to give you students a few pieces of advice. And because we're attempting to do something I think is really unusual, and that is to grapple with two traditions, it's hard enough to grapple with one tradition, and very few people ever master one tradition. Very few people ever master even one segment of one tradition. If you look at our tradition, for instance, the qira'at of the Quran, there's 10 variants of the Quran that are considered acceptable. Those take now, for most people that master them, they take a good lifetime to learn. Calligraphy alone is a lifetime study now. So many aspects of the tradition really do take a lifetime. There's a young 22-year-old Arab boy who has memorized all 9 collections of the hadith. He was tested recently in the Haram, and it was really stunning to watch the testing by muhaddithun. They would only give him the first part of the hadith and he would finish it and then tell which book it was in. And it was really quite a masterful performance. But the point is, he was gifted with a photographic memory, obviously, and our ummah has had many people like that. I've met a few myself. That's a great gift. Memory is a great gift, and it is a prerequisite to studying tradition, to have a retentive memory at least. It's not a condition for ijtihad that you have rote memorization, but you have to know where to find the things in the books at least. So in the spirit of that, I'll look from two traditions. I'm going to give you some fatherly advice to our younger students. One comes from Imam al-Juwayni, who said, أخي أو أسخ in a riwayah, لن تنال العلم إلا بستة. You will not acquire knowledge except with six things. سأنبيك بالتفصيل عن بيانها. I will give you in detail what those six things are. And then the first one, he said, ذكاؤن, which is intelligence. You have to have some level of intelligence to grapple with this. Now, one of the things about our tradition is that we actually believe in what's called a fath. And one of the names of God is Al-Fattah, the opener, the one who opens and gives you openings. I saw a fatwa in Al-Wansharisi that really struck me as interesting. It was a fatwa about a student in Fez who was not very smart, but he was really struggling. And they asked whether or not he should be kicked out and his stipend taken away from him. And then the fatwa was, give him 10 years, and if the fatah doesn't come to him by then, get rid of him. So that was quite good. There's a Mauritanian story just about fatah, because it's important. Because some of you, all of us feel that our intelligence is not what we would like it to be. Hence, we've got a whole industry of AI trying to work out how we can just insert chips into our brain and become supercomputers. But all of us feel that, you know, we're not really worthy or intelligent enough to grapple with some of these ideas. So just two quick stories. One, there was a Mauritanian who studied the Mukhtasar of Khalil. It takes a few years to study this book. It's a book of really riddles, and he had a very difficult time with it. And it just wasn't making sense to him. And he had studied it 10 times, and he still really couldn't understand it. And he decided he was going to give up, and he went, and he was sitting by an ant hill. And one of the things the Mauritanians love to do is watch insects and bugs. They're incredibly, it's like a culture of entomologists, because in the desert, there's not a lot to watch. And so you get, like, I really got used to watching, like, lizards and dung beetles are fascinating to watch, carrying their dung around. Got a whole culture of dung beetles now. But he watched this ant trying to get a piece of couscous up the ant hill, and it kept rolling down. It was like Sisyphus. And the ant did it 10 times, and on the 11th time it got in with this piece of couscous. And he said to himself, I can't let an ant have greater aspiration than me. I'm going to do it one more time. And he had his opening. So that's a famous story. Another story is a famous story of Imam al-Taftazani, who was noted to be not very bright. He had an incredible spiritual experience, and after that he was noted for his incredible ability to grapple with the most difficult metaphysical concepts with incredible dexterity. So there is hope for us. We should always aspire. Ya Fatah, Ya Alim, iftah lana fathan qariba was a traditional dua. You know, I was taught that by Habib Ahmed Mashur al-Haddad as a dua for study. You call on the fatah, the opener, and the knower. So dhaka is something that we know now with neuroplasticity that it actually does increase as you study. So, and they used to think that it closed at about adolescence, but it actually continues on throughout your life. So the more you study, actually the bigger your intellect gets. And Sayyidina Omar said, تعلم العربية فإنها تزيد في العقل. Learn Arabic because it will increase your intelligence. And we know this now to be true, that if you learn a subject, it will actually increase neuroplasticity of your brain, will adapt to the new things, there will be more dendritic connections, and you'll be smarter and brighter. So you should see that as you study. And the harder you study, the brighter you get. Like the golfer who made an incredible putt, and somebody said to him, that was so lucky. He said, the more I practice, the luckier I get. The same is true for studying. The more you study, the more intelligent you'll get. So, and then he said, the kaun wahirsun, you know, being covetous for knowledge, like really being covetous, hirsun, wanting to know. This is one of the things Aristotle begins his great book on metaphysics, which Ibn Sina read 50 times before he understood it. He begins it by saying that all people want to know, that it's part of our nature. This is why little children ask why. Then they're the metaphysicians of the world, because their great question is always why. It's not how. They want to know why. They want to know causation. Heros is really important, to have an intense desire for knowledge. And then there's turi, why one says istibarun, which is patience, and that's certainly true. Isbiru wasabiru, be patient, but also enjoin each other to patience. Tawaso bilhaqi wa tawaso bisabr. They advise each other to the truth, but also to be patient, because study is incremental. You scaffold in your studying. It's an incremental. You have plateaus, and learning goes, it goes, initially you might have a lot of insights, and then you plateau, and those plateaus are very difficult because you get bored. And so it's very important, and boredom is the great enemy. This is one of the seven deadly sins. It's called acedia, which they called it the noonday devil, because it was the one that afflicted monks more than anything, because they were supposed to meditate in their cells, and they would get bored. And so boredom, they call it now type of laziness, but it's really an ennui that sets in, this type of boredom. And one of the things that the great philosopher Kierkegaard said is that the people who remove God from their lives, they become afflicted with a deep boredom. They become very bored with life. And he said always accompanying that boredom is a type of cynicism. And so they're always looking to be stimulated because they're just bored with everything. Whereas people that have God in their lives are in a constant state of wonder, because God is just so extraordinary and so amazing and so bewildering. One of the meanings of al-ilah in Arabic is the one that bewilders, you know, that creates hayra in you. That's very important, is to learn how to be alone with yourself, right? It's very difficult for a lot of people. So istibarun, and in another riwayah, ishtihadun, to really struggle and give a lot of effort. And then he said, wa bulghatun. Bulgha in Arabic is what will get you somewhere. It's like the provision you need to complete a task. Balagh is from balagha, you know, to reach something. So bulgha is what enables you to reach something. The bulgha is, I mean, people here, you've been given a great gift, which is leisure time. It's time where you don't have to worry about the cost of things. Imam al-Shafi'i, he said, لو كلفت شراء بصرة ما تعلمت مسألة. If I was forced to worry about how much the price of onions were, I would have never learned. In other words, having to think about worldly affairs all the time really prevents you from that type of stress-free environment. As stress-free as possible, dunya is stressful by nature. And then there's another riwayah, ghurba, which is being in a place where you're not from. Because when you're in a place where you're from, you've got all your friends and all your distractions. But by moving away to another place, that's why rihla was so important in the Islamic tradition for study, was actually to take a journey to learn, to get away from your environs that were distracting, all your friends and all your companions. And then he said, وَتَلْقِينُ أُسْتَاذٍ, and then to learn from a teacher. تَلْقِينُ أُسْتَاذٍ. It's very important. Traditionally, it was said that knowledge was in the breasts of men and women, obviously, because there are many great women scholars, especially in that early period. The Tabaqat ibn Sa'd is filled with women. And historically, about 15% of notable scholars in any generation were women. This has clearly been proven by the Tabaqat literature, the biographical literature of scholars, that between 10 and 15% in any generation of notable scholars were women. So we did have many, many great female scholars. They tended not to write out of modesty and humility, because writing was considered very dangerous. That's why there's so few tafsirs. Despite the fact we had so many great scholars, they just didn't want to write about the book of Allah. And that's why we have so many tajweed books and grammar books, because they weren't worried about getting those wrong. And then he said, وَطُولُ زَمَانِي, and having time. That knowledge really takes a lot of time. You have to have the time to learn. And when you graduate from the BA, this is really the beginning of the journey. And then the master's, traditionally, the master's was our highest degree in the West. The PhD was a research degree that came later. But the original master's was the highest degree, because it was a license to teach, which still in our culture, it's a license to teach. That what it's saying is that you've studied enough to be able to transmit what you've studied to other people. So you have to work to become masters as best to your ability, because when you get that degree, you can go to a college, you can go to a high school, and you can get a job as a teacher. And so it's very important that it not be, you know, in our tradition we have what's called shahadat al-zur, which is a false testimony. And Sheikh Muhammad Amin al-Shinqiti was asked once what the best definition for false testimony was. And the word in Arabic for testimony and for diploma are the same. And he said it's these diplomas that you get when you graduate from this institution he was teaching in Medina. So you don't want your shahada to be shahada to zur. You want it to be really to be meaningful. So, and then Qadi Abu Bakr also gave advice. He said that you have to have humility. There's a verse in the Quran that says, I will remove my signs from those who have arrogance in the earth, بِغَيْرِ حَقْ, without any warrant for that, because only Allah is mutakabbir. Only Allah can declare His greatness. And so that's very important, humility, that without humility, you will not be able to learn. And arrogant people can have information, but they will never have wisdom. It's just they're mutually exclusive. And so that's very important. Then he said also to have humility before the subject, you know, a charitable reading of things. You should always read things first charitably before you read them judgmentally, to have a type of humility to make sure you understand things. Come min a'ibin qawlan sahiha wa afatu fit fahm as-saqimi. And Mutanabbi says, how many people find fault in something and the fault is their understanding of that thing, right? Because you didn't know, understand the grammar of it, or there was a misprint and you assumed that it was right, or you were applying something from another science to that science that wasn't applicable, like demanding precision in one science that doesn't allow for the type of precision that you think it allows. So that's very important, is to have humility before the subject. And then he said humility before the teacher. Very important to have humility before the teacher. And sometimes teachers will have students that really challenge them because they're smarter than them, right? Because I've had students that I know are smarter than me. And you really have to respect their intellect, but they also have to understand that there's a type of humility that's necessary with intelligence, that if it's not there, it's very easy to become arrogant, and it becomes very dangerous. And so even if you think that you might understand something better than the teacher, be very careful, because you might not, and if you do, there's a great wisdom and benefit in just simply being humble, because it's a great gift. And then having a good opinion, husn al-dhan, is very, very good. You know, they called St. Thomas Aquinas the dumb ox. You know, they used to make a lot of jokes with him because he was very easy to play tricks on. There's a story once that one of the monks said, was looking out the window, and he said, oh my God, a flying cow. And Aquinas went to the window to look, and they all started laughing. And he just turned and said, better to believe in flying cows than monks that lie. So husn al-dhan is a very good approach, just to have a good opinion, to think the best of people before you think the worst. And then he said to scaffold, like to recognize grammar is what it all begins with, grammar. If you don't know grammar, you cannot learn a civilizational tradition, because it's based on grammar. And also obviously logic, which is very important. We're trying to restore the centrality of that science in our tradition. And the logic that we're learning is a logic that a lot of people that are involved in this area think it's been supplanted by other forms of logic. Propositional logic, Gottlob Frege started this movement to get rid of the metaphysics of logic, which is largely found in the concept. So the type of logic that we're teaching here is a classical form of logic, but it's very important, because one of the things that we talk about, freedom of speech, everybody clamors about freedom of speech, which is a highly overrated privilege, or some people obviously would view it as a right. Freedom of speech is predicated on freedom of thought, and freedom of thought is predicated on being able to think freely. Most people can't think freely because they're shackled with the constraints of their own intellects, with the logical fallacies, like hasty generalization. You're not thinking freely if you make a hasty generalization. You're thinking based upon a default setting of the mind itself. And then he talks also about mudhakara, which is very important. Most of your study will be on your own, and then when you do mudhakara with your fellow students, in other words, speaking amongst them about the subject matter. And that's why the cohort system is so important, because the cohort system creates a community of learners, because you're reading the same books. And one of the gifts of different people reading the same book is they find out they're reading different books, because their understandings differ. And so they can allow insights somebody might have an insight that you didn't know. And one of the studies they did at UC Berkeley that I studied when I was at GTU was a really interesting study about group learning. And they were struck by how good the Asians did in math and how poor some of the other communities were doing in math. First of all, they studied what the Asians were doing. They found, by and large, they studied math together. And so they would help each other work out the problem. So they actually had these students groups, minority groups that were not doing as well in math, actually study together. And consistently, they found that their grades went up from that. So mudhakara is very important. So that's an Islamic tradition. Now I want to look at quickly at, and then I'll conclude. I'll look at from the Western tradition. We have Shakespeare, who was obviously a great master of many, many subjects. It's clear for anybody who's ever read Shakespeare. He was also a great sportsman. He knew a lot about different sports, especially bowling is one of his favorite, traditional English bowling. So like, there's the rub. You know, that's a sporting metaphor. So he has advice to Laertes, who was going off to study from his father, Polonius. And he says in that, he says, "And these few precepts in thy memory," in other words, retain these. I'm going to give you some advice. I want you to retain them. "See thou character." Really work on your character, on your akhlaq, your moral well-being. "Give thy thoughts no tongue." Don't always have to give your opinion. "Nor any unproportioned thought his act." In other words, don't act on thoughts that you haven't fully deliberated. Really think deeply about what you do before you do something. Because most of the major mistakes we make in life are from doing things without thinking. And one of the most amazing things about our tradition is what's called istikhara, which is where if you're going to do anything of any serious consideration, you always do istikhara, which is a prayer where you actually pray to God, astakhiruka, right? I ask you to choose for me with your knowledge. Staqdiruka biqudratika, and I'm asking you with your ability to do that. So that's very important. And then he says, "Be thou familiar, but by no means vulgar." Be familiar with people, but don't go down to that level that very often happens when people become too familiar, which is where they tend to become vulgar, right? Vulgarian is a word you might want to look up, because we have a whole culture now of vulgarians, where people that swear for no reason, one of the signs of the end of time, the Prophet said, you will see obscenity without any reason. Because it used to be people swore when they got angry. Now people just swear, right? Just for the sake of it. And obscenity is, it's obscene for a reason. Every culture has obscene words. That's something very important. Don't become vulgar. "The friends thou hast and their adoption tried, grapple them to thy soul with hoops of steel." The Prophet ﷺ said one of the signs of the end of time is, he said, you should count yourself lucky if you have one true friend. And a true friend is gold. It's the one that yushattitu shamluhu liyajma'ak. He will do everything. He will basically pull himself apart to pull you together. True friends are rare, and it's a very high maqam in Islam, the maqam of sadaqah. And siddiq in Arabic, which is a true friend, means the one who's truthful. They're not obsequious, or they'll tell you what they really think. "But do not dull thy palm with entertainment." You could look at this a few different ways, but one of the meanings is, everybody you shake hands with, don't let them become your boon companion. You know, just because a lot of people just like sitting around with people and just shooting the breeze. And if you find an entertaining person, it becomes a type of enjoyment. So don't dull thy palm with entertainment by just going around looking for people to associate with. And one of the snares of the devil with students is to get them to do everything except study. So you will constantly be distracted. And I feel sorry for students today in that the distractions are much greater than they've ever been for people. So I had the good fortune of studying in some really isolated places, so I know the blessing of pure isolation. And then he says, "Do not dull thy palm with entertainment of each new-hatched, unfledged comrade. Beware of entrance to a quarrel, but being in, bear it that the opposed may beware of thee." Imam Malik radiallahu anhu, literally, he was once in a gathering and they started arguing, and he got up and he shook his rida, like almost like a masseuse shakes their hands out after they massage, just to kind of get that out of their system. He shook his rida and he said, "Antum harb." He said, you're war. And he left. And he used to say, ليس الجدال من الدين في شيء. This religion has nothing to do with argumentation. And a man came to him once. He was from the Murji'iyah, one of the sects. And he said, Ya Aba Abdillah, أجادرك. Let me argue with you about this issue. And Imam Malik said, وَإِذَا غَرَبْتَنِي. And if you win the argument, he said, تَتْبَعُنِي, you follow me. He said, وَإِذَا غَرَبْتُكَ. He said, أَتْبَعُكَ. If I win, I'll follow you. And then he said, وَإِذَا جَاءَ ثَالِثٌ وَغَلَبَنَا. What if a third comes and he defeats both of us? He said, نَتْبَعُهُ. He said, we'll follow him. He said, my friend, you're going to be on a new religion every day. And he said, as for me, I know what I know and I know where I got it. And that's what I'm following. So that's tradition, that you don't have to grapple with things in each generation. You have a kind of consistent truth that's been transmitted. You have to still grapple with it because not all of it's absolute. That's important. Not to get into arguments, get into discussions. But it's very different from argumentation. Give every man thine ear, but few thy voice. This is very good advice for a student. You know, listen attentively, because this is the time of listening, but don't be so quick to give your opinion about things. Take each man's censure, but reserve thy judgment. Listen to people's criticisms of you and take them seriously, but don't be too quick to criticize others. Imam Shafi'i was once asked, how did you get such good character? He said, I always listened to my critics. If they made him think about, you know, he's got a point. I talk too much, or I argue too much, or I'm arrogant, then he would work on changing that. Costly thy habit as thy purse can buy, but not expressed in fancy, rich not gaudy. You know, wear something that's appropriate to your station. Don't dress like a poor person if you're not poor. And don't be gaudy, for the apparel oft proclaims the man. This is something that modern people have completely dismissed, although in reality, their apparel often does declare them. Traditional people always dressed well because they knew what the human being was. It's a very exalted creature. And this is why all traditional clothes have an elevating quality in them. Even peasants dressed beautifully, and they always had good clothes to wear on special occasions. Now we have t-shirts at award ceremonies. This is the type of culture that we're in. And just look at any pictures from before the 1960s in any civilization on this planet, and look how people dressed, and look at the way they dress today, because it does declare who they are. Their minds are like that. Their minds are sloucher minds, and so that's reflected in their own state. And then he says, neither a borrower nor a lender be, good advice, to not give surety is surety, as one of the great Greek wise men said. For loan oft loses both itself and friend. You loan people money and you lose their friendship. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man. If you're true to yourself, you'll be true to other people. But if you're false to yourself, you're going to be false to other people. So that's very good advice. One of the most important things that people have a really difficult time today is being alone. And one of the things that this machine does is it prevents people from ever being alone with themselves now, because you just constantly can be entertained. But you have to learn to be alone. One of the great scholars, he said, لِقَاءُ النَّاسِ لَيْسِ يُفِيدُ شَيْئًا سِوَى الْهَذَيَانِ مِنْ قِيلًا وَقَالِ. You know, that meeting people really doesn't benefit a lot other than just kind of empty he said, she said words. فَأَقْلًا مِنْ لِقَاءَ النَّاسِ إِلَّا لِأَخْذِ عِلْمًا وَإِصْلَاحِ حَالِي. So don't have a lot of meetings with people except to rectify your state by meeting with people in a better state than you, and to learn, to study.